we have already shown the video to the leadership team in our last big leadership team meeting. And because we wanted them to be more aware of not only people that they would be working with here on campus, but also people and styles of personality, styles of learning that they will be encountering for the rest of their lives, not only as coworkers, but also as possibly bosses, employers. And so we really wanted to stress the strengths that people with dyslexia or other learning disabilities too, the strengths that people with dyslexia have. So we showed that video, and we had several people come up afterwards saying, wow, that was so powerful, and I know this person who has dyslexia, or I have dyslexia, and it's so validating to hear that there are other people who have experienced a lot of the same kind of difficulties that I have. And so I think that's a really, really, really well done video for that reason, because it really focuses a lot on the strengths. I think that one of the things we will continue to stress with students is that as the world really grows via technology, there are a lot of ways that people with dyslexia can use technology in ways that they couldn't before. Like, for instance, they can listen to books as well as hear them. And so, I mean, as well as read them, or not read them, as has been the problem in the past. My husband is dyslexic, and one of my sons is also dyslexic. And so it's been really great for me to see how much easier it is for my son to be able to listen to the books that he's supposed to be reading throughout his schooling that my husband didn't have the opportunity to do. So he was missing out on a whole part of the curriculum by not being able to read very well all of those books. And at the time when he was growing up, it was really looked down on to have any kind of learning disability. Fortunately, we know so much more about it now. And so seeing then my son have a lot more opportunities has been excellent. And if anyone wants to, the phone number for my husband or my son, if y'all want to interview them, I have asked them already, and they would be agreeable to that. So just let me know if you want to interview them. There's for me, working especially with those two, one of the things that I've seen is that there's really only one thing they can't do, and I'll talk about that in a second, but they really honestly seem to have another whole facet of personality that is more, it's kind of a way of knowing that's not tactile. They look at things and are much more creative, but there's just this other side of their personality that they are has partly to do with the fact that they really developed their sense of hearing, of listening, the skill of listening. They listen so much better than I do, and they're always just really paying attention to what people are talking about, much, much better than I am, and they are really creative. The thing then that I have found with those two, at least, that they cannot do. I came home from work one day, and my husband was helping my son with his spelling, studying spelling. And I thought at first, should I say anything? Because I heard, you know, a word being misspelled. My son was misspelling, and my husband was saying, yeah, that's right. Okay, good. So there's one thing they can't do. That is the only thing I think they can't do. But I have had to learn that it's not really something they want to joke about. They are real sensitive about it. Even as much as it's becoming more, you know, we're seeing through things like that video what a huge contribution people with dyslexia have made. But still, it's a real sensitive thing, and I understand that. And I have always been one who can win spelling bees, and so I, you know, that's not something I can brag about with them because they're not impressed at all. it's kind of sad, but I've learned a lot being able to to watch them, how they learn. And one of the other qualities I've seen in both of them is that they will not give up. They work so hard. They struggle and struggle, but they don't give up. They're really tenacious when they're working at projects. And that's a great quality to have. That really is what makes people successful, more than being brilliant or being able to win a fund. It's the fact that you can work hard and not give up. So that is then one of the things that we want the leadership team to understand about people, and to not make assumptions about what people can and can't do based on the fact that they don't read very quickly, and to be sensitive to things like not making people read out loud. A lot of people with dyslexia, that's really humiliating to them. They have brilliant brains, but reading out loud, because it's slow and laborious, is a difficult thing for them to do. And so it's, we want leadership team and other people that work with students with learning disabilities to understand and be sensitive to the differences. And those differences don't mean that they are less capable or less intelligent. And a lot of times they're really, really bright. But so that's how we will continue to use that video in training leadership teams, specifically the tutors and SI leaders, because we always do work with them on learning disabilities. But that, I just think that video is such an excellent one. Does anybody have any questions then, at least as far as my part?
Lisa, you did say that your husband would be willing to be on our panel.
Yes,
well,
he would, yeah.
Do you want to tell them what he does today? I love the story about when he did his six-word.
Yeah, his six-word memoir, yeah. My husband works now in San Antonio for the Edwards Aquifer Authority. So it's a job where he gets to get outside all the time. He has to make sure that, like, for instance, underground storage tanks aren't leaking into the aquifer. He has to make sure that wells are safe, that they're not leaking pollution into the aquifer. So he's outside a lot, and he by passion is a caver. He loves going into caves and doing really dangerous things, like I think was pointed out in that video too. So when his last semester, I don't know if y'all remember, the English department put on this six-word memoir event where people were encouraged to write a memoir for themselves, something meaningful about themselves in six words. And his was country boy, city job, dyslexia pays. So it was kind of nice to see that he struggled, he worked at it, he came from just being a country boy and loving the outdoors to having a really good job that he loves. So there's a lot of positives there. So
what about your son?
He is a real animal person. He loves snakes and lizards and really bright. You know, he picks up on things just by listening. He hates to read, which kills me. I'm an English major, and I was just sure all my kids would be readers, but he hates having to read. But if he hears it, he picks up on it better than I do when I'm reading. So, but he also likes to cave and get outdoors and do a lot of real physical kinds of interesting things, but he'll never be a good writer. He can work at it. And really, that one of the things that I've seen with my husband, though, the more he reads, the easier it is. So if he ever lets a few days go by, it's harder the next time he picks up a book or a newspaper or whatever. So he has to really consciously always read every day something. And he has learned to do a pretty good job with writing. And, you know, he has to do a lot of kind of scientific reports for his job. And he does a pretty good job, but with practice, when there's some time that goes by between reports, he gets a little fuzzy with them, but he does a pretty good job. It's because he doesn't give up. He just works hard at it, and he knows what the rules are to write a good paper, and he follows them. And so that's probably what my son will do as well. But they're both real science people. which I think is pretty common for a lot of people with dyslexia. Okay, questions then?
Any questions?
When he was in elementary school, do the teachers at all give him a break when it comes to spelling tests, or no?
My husband, no. My son, he does. They give him a longer period of time. He still had to pass spelling tests, though, which was almost impossible for him. But they've come a long, long way as far as helping them learn to spell in better ways than they did before. But yeah, they didn't really give him a break as far as spelling. They just gave him a longer amount of time to take those tests. And, you know, he got help when he was in kindergarten. Normally it's third grade before they start working with students who have dyslexia, but he was identified that early and they started working with him. And I really think that has made an enormous amount of difference for him. Plus, he has learned to advocate for himself as well. So he's real good about saying, nope, you forgot that I need to go sit in another room and I get longer to take a test or whatever it is. He's not afraid to ask for that, which is excellent, because a lot of students are. And, you know, it can be embarrassing to them, but he doesn't have a problem with that. And I think it's because he started so early. But he has come such a long way as far as how well he can read, because they started as young as they did with him, working with him. Thanks for asking that. Anything else? Okay, well, good work and good luck to y'all with this whole project. And I can't wait to see the event on April 11th. That's really exciting.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Lisa, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here to talk to y'all today about my role as ADA coordinator at TLU. It's a job, I think I've been doing it for about 15 years, and I'm a little distracted being up here, and I need to tell you why. I was a freshman here in 1972 when this building was brand new, and this was where I had my English Comp 1 class with Dr. Elizabeth Medford. And I think I must have a little attention difficulty, because I thought, why on earth would they build this classroom with this window looking out into the rest of the building? Because I sat on this row, and I just sat there and I stared across at the people in the other offices. I was interested in who was walking by, and I thought, oh my gosh, this is going to be a rough semester. And it was. But anyway. So I'm trying not to be distracted with looking out the window.
Yeah. And people wave at us.
Yes, of course. You know. All right, put my little blinder on and look at you. Okay, you know, when I became ADA coordinator at Texas Lutheran, it was just kind of a job that they said, okay, since you're going to be the counselor, you're going to do this job too. And I had no idea what the Americans with Disabilities Act was at all, or what was entailed in it, and just kind of learned in bits and pieces. The person doing it before I came on was Martha Rim, who is in charge of the library now. So she taught me everything that she knew. And then I joined a professional organization, and they taught me everything that I possibly would need to know. And the rest, actually, I learned so much from students over the years. So I want to talk to you a little bit about the special ed umbrella in the K-12 system. Do we have any educators, anybody that's going to be in the teaching field in here? No. Oh.
Well, I'm not, but my mom's an inclusion teacher for 4th and 5th grade, so she tells me everything.
Okay. Right. Okay. In the K-12 system, the law that governs special ed learning disabilities, it's called the IDEA. I don't know what that acronym stands for. Do you know what that acronym stands for? It's the individual something, something, something. How about that? But anyway, it is the job of the K-12 school district to go out into their population and identify students that might have some kind of learning disability, learning difficulty. They have to recognize the fact, hey, this kindergartner seems to be having trouble, or this 4th grader obviously can't read. We need to get this 4th grader tested and get the child the help that they need. But believe it or not, and this is something that is very important to me, believe it or not, there are some school districts in the state of Texas that it's like me in this room, they have blinders on. They don't want to identify the children in their school district that need extra help because it's so incredibly expensive to hire consultants to come in, the educational diagnosticians. If it's a poor school district, they don't have the money to even have a diagnostician on staff at their district. They have to pay out-of-pocket consultant fees to have people come in and test these kids. So unfortunately, a lot of students go through public school with no idea that they are dyslexic, no idea that they have a written expression disorder, no idea that they have any other kind of reading comprehension disorder. They struggle, and they just think that they're stupid. They think that they're dumb. And unfortunately, there are cold-hearted, unknowing people that will say things like that to a child. Right? Isn't that in the documentary? Right. And that just drives me crazy. Whereas there are other school districts, luckily, like the one in San Marcos, where Lisa's son was identified very early on as having dyslexia, so that Sawyer could be pulled out of the classroom and get the extra help that he needs. So anyway, it's the job of the K-12 system to look at their population of kids and identify the kids that need help. And then what is supposed to happen, they get the help that they need, and they get through K-12, and they do well because they get whatever, in K-12 it's called a modification. Students with dyslexia, students with other disabilities may be able to have a word bank on their test where they can just look at word, okay, I know that word, I know that that word means this. They also, on their multiple choice questions, like instead of having five possibilities for their answers, they may be cut down to three. And then also they get extra reading help. Content mastery, isn't that what they call it?
Yeah.
Is that what they call it, content mastery? Yeah. Right, where they get to be pulled out of the classroom and they get to work on their reading in a more intensive way than the rest of their cohort does. Well, and that's great for the students who are identified. And the students that have that benefit of being in school districts where they actually have technology, it's huge. I've had students come to me to work with me through my office that grew up in a school district that have Kurzweil computers. Let me tell you what Kurzweil is. Kurzweil is a German man who invented the state-of-the-art optical character recognition software. I have a computer and a scanner in my office where I can take any textbook, any document, anything, and I can scan it, and the computer looks at it and converts it, and it can read that document with several different accents, you know, to a student, and it highlights each word as it goes through the textbook. So for students with reading difficulty that have grown up K-12 with that kind of technology, it is huge, not to mention just simply books on tape, like Sawyer has had in school, being able to listen to that textbook read to him. It has made an incredible difference in his education, as it does with students that grow up with that technology. In the K-12 system, what happens is that the teacher will say, okay, excuse me, Sawyer, I'll just use Sawyer's name because I think it's such a cute name, that's Lisa's son. Okay, Sawyer, it's 2:00, it's time for you to go to reading, or Sawyer, it's time for you to get your time and a half. Everything is facilitated for students with disabilities in the K-12 system. Well, and when students get to college, they're adults, they're 18, they're no longer covered under this IDEA law. They are now in the realm of the Americans with Disabilities Act. And no, you don't get a flyer on that, you know, like the register to vote flyer. You don't automatically know that you're an adult and you're in charge of all this stuff for yourself. It gets really complicated. In higher ed, it is the responsibility of the student with the learning disability to go to me and say, excuse me, I'm identifying myself as a student with a disability. And this is my disability, here's my paperwork, these are the accommodations that I need in the classroom. You know, sometimes that happens with a student that has really learned these self-advocacy skills that are necessary to survive in the adult world, But not all students are like that. More than likely, the students come the summer before their freshman year with their mothers, right?
Yep.
With a ream of paper, you know, and one of those accordion files, because you've got three copies of every ARD this child has ever been to, right? And the mom sits there and tells me everything that the student needs at TLU, and here's the documentation to prove it. And so okay, it's going to take me a while to get through this, but let's talk about, and I talk to the student, okay, what are your needs in the classroom? And the student and I get in a dialogue, and I come to understand what the student needs. Mrs. Weirs, it would be real helpful for me to have more time taking a test. Mrs. Weirs, it would be really helpful for me to have books on tape. It would be really helpful for me to have a reader in the testing room so that if I get confused, that person can read the question to me. Other accommodations that are common for students with reading issues, such as dyslexia, and dyslexia is only one. There are many other kind of reading issues that can complicate things for students in the classroom. So anyway, time and a half on tests is very common for a lot of disabilities. Students with dyslexia or reading issues need more time to be able to read that essay question, decode it, quite frankly, and formulate an answer and then write it down. A student with dyslexia definitely might need a reader, somebody to read the test with them. That is very fair. That doesn't give that student anything other than just access to the information, so having a reader. Okay, many times students with dyslexia have horrendous handwriting, and so they might need a scribe to have somebody actually write the answers as they dictate it. A student with dyslexia might have a really hard time taking notes in the classroom, so certainly allowing that student the accommodation where they can use a digital recorder in the classroom and they can sit on the front row and they can have that recorder there so that then they can offload that MP3 file to their computer and rehear that lecture as often as they want to. Because many times students with reading issues are very auditory learners, okay? Like Elisa said about Sawyer, he remembers everything. If he hears something, he learns it. So that's very common. Well, for students that have grown, this is where the problem arises. When students grow up in that K-12 system where they feel very different than the rest of their schoolmates because they have to go to content mastery, they have to go to tutoring, they have special tests, they have special, whatever. Going off to college is real liberating because it's this big do-over, right? Especially if you grow up in a town where you have been with those same people since kindergarten. And you have that horrible nickname that you've had since the fourth grade, but now you're going off to Texas Lutheran University and nobody knows about that issue at the museum when you spilt on your shorts and you got that horrible nickname or whatever it was that happened, right? Y'all all know what I'm talking about, right? That big do-over of going off to college and it's finally being different. And everybody, when they go off to college, all they want is to fit in. Right? That's all you want to do is fit in with your classmates. Well, students with disabilities, all they want is to be normal. I don't want to be pulled away from my class. I don't have to test out. I don't have to go to reading. I don't have to. So what do you think the likelihood is of that student testing outside of the classroom to get time and a half or testing in the Meadows Center so that they can have a reader or a scribe? I mean, what do you think? Is it likely that they're going to follow through with that? No, because here's their big do-over, right? This is the big do-over. So, unfortunately, it is very unfortunate that many times students with learning disabilities, students with dyslexia, get to college, and even though they're all yes, ma'am, yes, ma'am, yes, ma'am, and they're meeting with me and their mom, that summer before their freshman year, I may never see them again. You know, they don't come to me for help. They don't come to me to arrange for testing outside the classroom. They don't want to do it. They want to make it on their own. And, you know, sometimes they do. Sometimes they do. Sometimes they have such great compensatory skills from learning their own way. And you heard the students in that documentary talk about how they learn and that they have to work so much harder. Sometimes students can do okay without accommodations. But I tell you, the first student that I ever had that had dyslexia taught me so much because I had no idea. But her process, she didn't use any technology except a tape recorder. And what she did is that she would use a ruler and her textbook, and she would sit and she would read her textbook aloud into the tape recorder. Because she could read the words, it's her comprehension that was just, she couldn't understand anything that she was reading when she was reading it. But she would read it anyway. You know, imagine reading a chemistry book word for word into a tape recorder so that then you can listen to it again. And when she would listen to it with her own voice, she would understand it. But she had to read it into a tape recorder and then she had to listen to it. And I would look out of my office and I would see her sitting in the student center every afternoon over in a corner with her headphones on, following along in her textbook. And she did great in school, and she went on and got a master's degree in, I don't even remember what it was. But she succeeded. She did great because she had her way. Like the young lady in the documentary that made copious note cards, you know, 500 note cards. Or the orthopedic surgeon that just, you know, he memorized everything. And he worked so hard with the cadavers to know exactly how all the processes would work together, and he was incredibly successful. So my charge to you, if any of you know anybody with a learning disability, learn about it. You know, tell me more about that. I don't know a lot about that, so tell me. Well, you know, because chances are that they learn in a completely different way than you learn, and you can probably learn something from them. I mean, it's look upon it as an opportunity. And if any of you ever run into another student that even mentions that they have a learning disability or that they have attention deficit disorder and that they're really struggling or that, I have such a hard time reading, I get so tired because I have dyslexia, you know, please ask that person if they know who I am and that if I get accommodations through my office. Be encouraging and supportive of them so that they can get the help that they need and hopefully matriculate and make the grades that they know, that they are able to show their professors that they know the information. So please be encouraging and supportive of them. If you have any classmates, brothers, sisters, cousins, right? I mean, we need to bring dyslexia out into the light of day so that people aren't afraid of that. And when Alex comes, she's got great stories to tell you. She's a very courageous young woman that has agreed to talk to you to tell you her story. And so she is coming, right?
Yeah, she's coming.
Okay. Do you want to?
Yeah.
Are you crossing your fingers?
No. She has a geography class at the same time. She's very, very conscientious.
Okay.
I mean, she doesn't want to miss.
Right. She doesn't want to miss this opportunity to talk to you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, I think this is a huge thing. And, you know, I'm an old woman, and I'm not disabled yet, but, you know, any minute. But, you know, on the other side of my career here, I'm dying to get on the other side of my job and become a higher ed advocate for students with disabilities to help them find the right fit with a college and get them hooked up with whatever services they need with DARS. Have y'all ever heard of DARS? It's Department of Assistance Rehabilitative Services. I don't know, it's one of those government acronyms that you like IDEA, you never really know. But anyway, it's a representative that everybody that has been diagnosed with a learning disability in high school should hook up with as soon as they graduate from high school. It should be their first step into this adult world of the ADA. And a DARS representative, you know, so many of our students that have disabilities on this campus, DARS pays for all of their textbooks, you know. Many times I have had students that need to be tested hook up with a DARS rep, and DARS pays for their diagnostic testing. I've had students with a really, really good DARS rep that will buy them their own software, their own Kurzweil software to have on their computer that will read books. Technology is hugely important when it comes to students with disabilities. Learning Ally, it used to be Reading for the Blind and Dyslexic. For students, I think they have free memberships. Mm-hmm. And they don't always have maybe the latest edition of that organic chemistry book, but they might have one that's, you know, one or two removed. And you get to listen to this sweet little British lady actually reading the textbook. They get people, human beings, to read their textbooks. So it's not the machine language of Kurzweil, but it's people who volunteer their time to read textbooks, which is great. But anyway, I always encourage students when they come to my office to find out who their DARS rep is back at home, because it's unfortunate that the high school counselors don't always make that connection for their students as they graduate, which is how I plan to use this documentary in what I do. Every fall, we have about 60 high school counselors come to campus to learn about TLU. And it's hosted by Enrollment Services, yes. Right? Yeah. And so you guys probably don't remember Johnny Walker. Did anybody have Johnny Walker as a rep? Yeah, you remember Johnny Walker. Great guy. I finally talked Johnny Walker into inviting me to this thing. So I want to talk to these high school counselors. Please, please, please let me come talk to these high school counselors. And he did, and it was great, because then I could talk to them about the importance of discussing with their students self-advocacy. That, you know, when they jump out of the IDEA into the ADA, they're going to have to know how to talk about their disability. They're going to have to know how to talk about how they learn. Because they have to disclose themselves. There's no law that says we're going to identify students with disabilities at TLU. You know, that's the K-12 system. But anyway, I want this high school counselor thing. There's like, it's a captive audience, right? Oh, like yeah. This last year, they even spent the night at the La Quinta, you know, because it was a two-day event. And I'm thinking, what better than to show these counselors this documentary? Hi, Alex. Come in. And so that's how I plan to use this documentary, is to help educate these high school counselors on the importance of hearing these students talk about their experience and how they learn and how they thrive and how they succeed. So it's just a remarkable tool, and I am so happy that Sarah found it or saw it on HBO.
My mom did.
Your mom did? Like, I cannot afford HBO. Are you kidding? I never would have seen it. So I'm just thrilled. Tell your mom, thank you so much.
She's a huge advocate.
Okay. Can go ahead.
One thing I wanted to, I see this class is really helping connect the community to resources, because one thing that I found. You know, I had to seek a lot of outside testing with my son. Very, very expensive. You don't know where to go. That's a problem. The other thing, when you're talking about DARS representative, mm-hmm. I didn't know that we had that option. He went through.
It's a big secret because it's expensive, right?
Exactly. And so my son went through 4 years at Ronald Reagan High School, which you would think Ronald Reagan High School would be a little more open on this stuff. And I did not know about it. I didn't know it was available to him. By the time he got here, it's too late. You have to apply in high school and have it transferred. If you're not part of the program in high school, then you have to go through this like 6-month application process to try to to get the services.
Set up to fail.
It's set up to fail. It's very frustrating. Yeah. And I told him, here, we can do this. He's like, forget it. I don't want to go through that. I don't want to do it. When you're dealing with someone who's been tested since they were 4 years old, the last thing they want is more testing. So I think if we can, have the awareness and help our community know what resources are available for free or, for a discounted fee or whatever.
Everybody has a DARS rep from where they, at home, where they come from. There is somebody that takes care of New Braunfels. There is somebody that takes, there are tons in Houston. There are tons in San Antonio. And depending on their budget, you know, it's all a budget thing. They may or may not be able to help with students. But it's always good to ask and check it out. DARS, Department of Assistive
Rehabilitation.
What's the S?
Services.
Thank you.
Well, you know, Terry, too, when I talked to the DARS woman on the phone, I said, why don't we know about you? And she said, well, I've tried to get into Reagan High School. They're not interested. They tell us we have it covered. We don't
That's
need you.
That's crazy.
So there is a stigma out there where the schools have this attitude of we have it handled. You know, we don't need any help. And then the students, it's to the detriment of the students. So we do need to reach out to educators in the community and hold them accountable. Not all. I mean, I've had great advocates in the schools, but then I've had teachers also tell me, I don't know anything about special ed. so you kind of get one or the other.
So we're going to educate them on April 11th, right? For at least everybody that was from.
We want to introduce Alex.
I would like to introduce you to Alex Norton. Alex is a freshman at TLU from Houston.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
ma'am. And she has graciously accepted the challenge of coming here today to talk to you about her experience. Thank you so much, Alex.
You're welcome.
Okay.
It's yours.
a big thing, like we were saying, like I didn't know about my DARS rep until second semester of senior year. I didn't find out about it until I came here to talk to Ms. Weirs. So I've gone through a 6-month process with DARS, so I'm now DARS affiliated. I was not diagnosed at 4. It took my private school until 3rd grade to finally admit that maybe there was something wrong. And I had to do outside testing because my school refused to test me. So at the end of 3rd grade, I was diagnosed dyslexic. I struggled with even just catching up to a 3rd grade level. I was in 5th grade and reading at a 4th grade level. I would meet daily with a tutor, a homework tutor that kind of read everything to me, made sure I understood it, taught it to me again. And then 3 times a week, I would meet with my dyslexia specialist, who basically sat there, taught me my ABCs, how to read, how to spell, how to write. I struggled through elementary school. It was, she needs glasses. Oh, she needs to sit up front. There's nothing wrong. She's perfectly fine. She's in 3rd grade. It's hard. That wasn't the case. They put my mom through the ringer for a couple years. I finally switched schools at the end of 5th grade. Went to a great school, except they refused to let me have my dyslexia tutor come in and work with me. So the summer of my 5th grade year, I tutored with her daily to try to get me up to speed where I could go off to school kind of on my own. And I got there. When I started sixth grade, I was reading at an 8th grade level, which is near impossible for most students with dyslexia to get to that fast. I was one of the lucky ones that had a tutor that was dedicated, wanted to know me. She was Niehaus certified. She was currently finishing her degree at Niehaus, so she was not completely finished. She graduated about 3 years ago, actually. She was a great tutor, worked with me full time. And after I saw her on and off through 8th grade. About eighth grade year, I decided that I needed to take charge of my education. If I wanted to get into high school and I wanted to go to college, I needed to take charge. My mom can't sit there and fight the school anymore, go to all my ARD meetings. It was up to me. So eighth grade year, I walked into my school, said, these are my accommodations. This is what I will be using. This is where I'll test. I received everything I asked for. I sat in on all my ARD meetings from there on out. I ran my ARD meetings because I didn't want to skip class. You pull me out for 30 minutes, can't pull me out for 2 hours. I refused to sit here. Got to high school. I went to St. Pius X. I was accepted at three private schools. Chose St. Pius because they had a Learning for Success program. That was a program that kind of taught students to open up, take charge, be who you really are. I went in that shy freshman that didn't want anybody to know. I was dyslexic. Refused to be known. I wanted to sit in the back, just get by. My director at the time refused to let that happen. By second semester of freshman year, I was speaking to a class, my entire campus, about my disability. My entire campus was 700 students, 300 faculty. And I sat there and talked to all of them. I then started moving up to parent meetings. I took charge of my parent-teacher meetings. I would go in and talk. At this point, I was still meeting with my homework tutor through freshman year. Sophomore year, I started to feel a little more confident. Only met with her when I had a major test, midterms and finals. By the end of sophomore year, I was then released from the Learning for Success class that I had to go to daily, kind of pushed out into the world on my own. Told, you know, you need to do it on your own. Go talk to your teachers, stuff like that. And I did. I never thought I'd admit this. I was a D student through middle school. I was lucky to get into the program because they usually don't accept students with D's. I showed a lot of potential, therefore I was accepted to my program. I am happy to say I graduated high school with A's and B's. It prouds me to say that I graduated my senior year with no help at all from my tutor. I don't see either tutor anymore. I guess my sophomore year I stopped seeing both of them. I am now reading at a sophomore level for college, but I still struggle. I still have to use every technique I was taught, flashcards, color coding. I still have to sit there and read. It may take me an hour to read something, whereas my friend finished it in 20 minutes. I'm okay with that. That's who I am. I don't let it stop me. I've never let a school say, she's not worth it. Why are we doing this? I've never given up on myself. My parents have never given up on me. I think that's why I'm okay standing here today talking about it, because it's who I am. I'm not scared of who I am anymore. I'm a dyslexic. Okay. I'm a swimmer. Dyslexia is not all who I am. I'm a roommate. I'm a daughter. I'm a friend. I'm not just a dyslexic. And that's what a lot of people don't understand. I've heard things in my dorm freshman year. I've heard things, well, she can't read because she's dyslexic. That's not the case. I can read perfectly fine. Takes me a little bit longer. She's not a good test taker. She has to test somewhere else. Okay, that's true. I do better on my tests when I'm not in the room. That's just the case. I'm not scared to admit it. You know, I stand up for myself. Most people in the dorm know that I'm dyslexic. I'm very open about it. I've never hidden it from anybody. If you're gonna be my friend, you've gotta be okay with me shutting you out for 3 hours a day because I have to read. You just kind of are okay with me. My parents always raised me to be okay with myself. I didn't get that till freshman year of high school. I was very scared, very nervous. I didn't have help. I had my tutors, but I had teachers that didn't care. I got to high school, all my teachers cared. They wanted to see me succeed. I went from a D student to an AB student a semester, and I refused to let my GPA drop below that. I am currently an AB student here. I'm very thrilled about that, including all the reading, and hope to maintain that GPA. And I want to go into teaching. I know what a good teacher is. I know what a bad teacher is, too. I've had them both. That's kind of why I want to teach. I want to help students that are like me or with other disabilities understand that they're not just a disability. They're a human being. They can do whatever they want to do. You guys have any questions for me?
I would just like to say that I admire your strength for actually going up in eighth grade, going and talking to your own teachers and whatnot, because I know a bunch of kids, because my mom teaches inclusion and deals with you know, people with dyslexia, and most teachers are very, you know, they don't encourage that, and most teachers kind of put them down and whatnot, and so I really, you know, appreciate that you, you know, stand up for yourself.
Well, thank you. I was put down by teachers in eighth grade. And you just are. You just kind of move on from it. I was never put in an inclusion room because I was always at private schools. But I do have friends that were put in inclusion rooms, and it's a little different. We're not, you know, you can label us special ed. And in most cases, we are considered special ed, but we're not. You know, being in an inclusion room just means a little extra time, kind of stuff like that. I went through private school. My parents chose that even after I was tested and was working through everything to keep me in private school because they felt it gave me the independence I needed, along with the structure that my parents could still kind of control how my teachers were and stuff like that. So I stayed in I've been in private my entire life. But I have friends that were in public that still to this day are scared to admit that they're dyslexic or ADHD. It's just who they are. You know, they don't want to come out about it, and that's perfectly fine. I just happen to be very open about mine. So yeah. Any other questions or anything?
How did you decide on TLU?
That's a funny thing. I applied to three different schools. TLU was kind of my first choice. Since I guess sophomore year of high school, I had our associate pastor came and lived with us for 6 months. Kind of pushed TLU into my head. Otherwise, I hadn't really looked at TLU. I came for a visit, and I noticed that like everyone was so open and friendly, and I liked the small classes, the atmosphere that you can go and talk to your professor without waiting a long time. They're on campus most of the time. And then I went and talked to Ms. Weirs, and the programs that will help me, the accommodations I can still receive here, it's what I needed out of a school. There are some schools like Shriner. It's a great university. My friend loves being there. It just wasn't the right place for me. TLU made me feel at home. Made me feel like I could be open about my disability and I didn't have to hide who I was. So that's why I chose TLU. Anything else?
Thank you. Alex.
Thank you so much. And Alex has agreed to be part of our panel. And are your parents going to be here, Alex?
Yes.
Is your tutor coming too?
My tutor can't, because she's got a foster child right now. But okay. I think my director is going to come from my high school. So.
Oh, from your high school?
Yeah. She's going to make a weekend of it and come spend the weekend with my parents and I. So
that's awesome. Yeah. And does someone want to tell Alex what you guys are planning for before?
Planning on doing a small reception, so of course we want you and your family to be there.
Yeah, having a little reception for everyone and getting everyone together before the showing of the documentary. So, very exciting.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. They're doing all the work, so.
They're doing a great job. Thank you so much.
this is just a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, it is. It really is. Well, and I was telling them before we started that there's a group in Austin that called Decoding Dyslexia, and they're having a showing of the documentary either today or tomorrow at the Paramount in downtown Austin. Sold out.
That's what we want.
Yeah, so I mean, there is interest and demand, which is really good.
You have the movie, right?
It's in my office.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I guard it in my life.
Where's the movie?
Yeah, that would be bad. That would be really bad.
But we'll stay in touch with you guys.
Okay.
As you know, they're planning everything.
Get the word out. Any educators that you know, any high school counselors, anybody that you know that has any kind of learning disability, please get the word out and make sure that they come on April 11th. Thank you all so much for your hard work. This is a big deal project, and I just am so grateful. Thank you.
Yeah. All right, thank you guys so much.
You're welcome.
Bye. Let's see, what else?